Yes, Hokie, we're going to get to everything today, but I have a little treat for you at the top of the show, right after I ask you how you are.
I'm doing great. I love treats. You know, it's the season, right? It's October, trick or treat.
You're right.
So I love it. I'm excited about this.
But I didn't get the indication you like surprise treats.
No, I always like to kind of know what's coming up, but, yeah. But with you, I always have to be on my toes.
This is a good one. Do you know Bill Priatko, the oldest living
Steeler?
Sure,
I know Bill. Yeah, he's one of Coach LeBeau's best friends. I mean, they were close.
What a wonderful man. I saw him last night out in Franklin, PA.
That's a ways from here.
Yeah, yeah, about an hour and a half. Played a little golf, shot over 100, was very angry, but then I became happy.
Yeah.
They were talking about there's three books out. A couple have to do with the origins of pro football, and as it turns out, some of the very first games and teams were played up there, not in Canton, Ohio, but up in Franklin, PA, or thereabouts.
Get out of here.
But the story that pertains to you is that George Von Banco and Dick LeBeau wrote a book about your 08 defense. Are you aware of that?
I am. It's a great book. I haven't read the whole thing yet. I was there at the book signing when Coach LeBeau was there, and Casey Hampton and I and Brett Kiesel, we were all together and did kind of a roundtable discussion, and it was fun. But I haven't read the whole book yet.
Well, your name came up last night. It was a bunch of residents at the Elks Club in Franklin, and then a panel up front, and I was among the panel, Hokie, talking about
you're big time.
I was on a panel.
Wow.
It was very exciting. But here's what stood out. While somebody else was talking, I picked up a copy of the book on your 08 defense.
Yep.
And at the end, one of the appendices, I don't know how you say that, plurally limits. In the appendix at the end, Dick LeBeau has a little statement on each player from that defense. Did you know that?
I did know that.
Here's what he said about Chris Hokie. Chris Hoke was Mr. Dependable for us. He played all of the positions on the line, was an excellent nose tackle. In that year, I think Hampton missed parts or all of several games. The defense never missed a beat with Hokie handling his part expertly. That's pretty good, isn't it?
That's pretty good, yeah. Coming from a Hall of Fame coach like Dickie LeBeau. And he came up and shared some of those thoughts with me at this signing for his book. And, you know, the interesting thing was he went back and watched every single snap of that season in preparation for writing that book.
Wow.
And then also for this opening of the book. And so, yeah, I mean, that means a lot because I love Dick LeBeau. And we all of us that played for him love him. And to have him say that means a lot.
James Farrier is quoted in the book as saying, I never in all my football career had a coach like that.
Yeah.
Well, did you? And if not, what made him different?
Well, I'll tell you what. I played for a lot of great coaches. Coach LeBeau was unique. I've shared this before. One of the stories that I like to share about the difference in contrasting Coach LeBeau with the other coaches was, you know, when he first came to the Steelers in 04, I was a young guy. I hadn't really played. I had played a few snaps here and there my first few seasons in the NFL. And then my fourth year, I knew that I needed to make a move to get into the lineup or I was going to be in trouble staying on with the Steelers. And Dick LeBeau comes in. And you know, it was pretty intense watching film of practice and reviewing film with the coaches. You just never knew how they were going to react or respond to a mistake in practice. You thought that they were going to rip you up and they did often. But when Dick LeBeau came in, I remember one time I made a mistake in one of the OTAs and I was sweating when that, you know, and cause Coach LeBeau, his approach was different. When I made that mistake on the field, usually I'd get screamed at up and down. That play, he came up to me and says, Hokie, that's tough to read. He goes, just be a little more patient and sit back, and you'll find that you'll be able to read through that, through the exchange, quarterback, running back exchange. It was on a zone blitz. We get into films, and that play's coming up, and I'm sweating because in the first 3 years, it would be an undressing for making that mistake. Well, that play comes up. Somebody starts to say something about it, and Coach LeBeau goes, Coach, I already talked to Hokie. We're good. Let's keep going.
Mm.
And that was it. And he was a guy who wasn't going to, you know, beat you up. He wasn't going to undress you for making a mistake. He was going to coach you up, and he was going to help you get better. And that was his approach, right? And a lot of guys respected that approach, and that helped me take the next step as a player because I really grew from my third year to fourth year, and I really attribute a lot to Coach LeBeau. And that's how he was with a lot of guys. And he was always, he knew what it was like to be a player. And he was a very successful player. And so that was his approach that really took a lot of guys to the next level.
In fact, Bill Priatko, the oldest living Steeler at age 93, was teammates with Dick LeBeau at one point, roommates, and they became lifelong friends. Here's the exercise, Hokie, and I'm very excited to present you with these treats today. So LeBeau goes over the 08 defense, and on each guy, he says a little something, and it's fascinating. I mean, Aaron Smith, he says this of Aaron Smith: I could count on the fingers of one hand how many times he got blocked in a year. He never was out of his gap, and he never took the wrong side of the offensive player. He was 99.9% grading out every week. Okay.
I don't know if that's a legit number, but it felt like that when I played with Aaron. Aaron was a big-time player. I think Aaron was one of the most underrated players in the NFL.
Holy
in his Steeler history. No,
yeah.
Aaron was a heck of a player. And listen, what people try to do to Aaron, they try to double-team him. And, you know, a lot of times the first play of the game would be like we call a counter power O, where they would double Aaron on the front side of a run and try to climb on a linebacker and beat a guard around. Aaron routinely beat that double team and made a play in the backfield, first, second play of the game. And he continually – he was so athletic for a big guy, and he did a great job, and he was – back then, we had impeccable technique. I mean, Coach Mitchell did a great job of teaching technique, and we did it. And Aaron, I agree with everything he said there. I don't know about 99.9%.
Every syllable he said, you agree with.
Yes.
So here's the exercise, and we'll do it quickly. Just a very quick reaction from you. Could be a couple of words, could be a sentence.
Yeah.
Could be something off the field with the guy, could be a specific memory, could be something in the game, could be something that LeBeau just said.
Okay.
I'm going to read off players from this great 08 defense. You tell me what pops into your mind first, a very short little thing.
Okay.
Ready?
I'm ready.
James Farrier, the Farrier Pigeon.
Leader, captain, reliable.
James Harrison.
Nasty, physical, tone setter.
Ryan Clark, now a ESPN fan.
Hitter, intense. Great compliment to Troy Polamalu.
Troy Polamalu.
Game changer, one of a kind, all-time great.
I once was walking into the locker room after practice, and Polamalu was playfully jumping on your back and kind of teasing you in a way. Did he have another side to him?
Oh,
like
he
that
was super
kind of
playful.
A childlike side?
Oh, there's no question. He was super playful and liked to have a good time, and a lot of guys didn't see that side of him, right? But Troy was... a great teammate, a great person to be around. He still is. It's fun to be with Troy, and that's what made that team so great. Was you, everybody knew these kind of guys, even like James Harrison, right? James Harrison is a guy that out in the public eye. I think he kind of wants everybody to look at him, fear him, right?
Yeah.
But when you get him behind closed doors, he's a playful guy. He's a good person, a good friend, and that was what made up that team. Was a lot of guys that when they took the field, and they dominated and they were nasty, but then behind the scenes, they were just good, down to earth people.
Lamar Woodley.
Oh, physical, big man, big plays and big games. He made big plays and big games routinely.
Not only did he do that, Hokie, I did the research of people who played a certain number of games and snaps. He is the greatest sack artist in the history of the NFL playoffs.
Is he really?
Yes, he is.
I mean, that's what I say. He made big plays and big games.
I'll tell you exactly what the numbers are. And I went through everybody from Lawrence Taylor to Bruce Smith. Those guys played a ton of games.
That's incredible.
This dude in 8 playoff games had 11 sacks.
I'm telling you. I mean, I couldn't tell you which games those were, but when I think back of Lamar's career and playing with him, that was my thought, was he makes big plays in big games routinely.
Ike Taylor.
I'll tell you, Ike didn't have good hands, but a great run defender. He was a cover guy. Think back to when he was with Coach Cower, and he had to sit down because he was struggling with his confidence. He came back the next year with Tomlin and just lights out, and his career just took off. Great guy, humble, soft-spoken. I mean, I can go on like that with every guy. I just don't want to take up the whole show, but, I mean, Ike was a great teammate and great run defender.
Aaron Smith, we mentioned.
Yep.
Lawrence Foote.
There's no Lawrence. Oh, Larry Foote. I'm thinking Lawrence. Lord, you know what, Larry Foote? Larry Foote was not the fastest guy. He was not the most athletic guy, but very instinctive. He was always in the right place at the right time. Made his play. Very disciplined. Big Ten Player of the Year, wasn't he? Or Defensive Player of the Year at Michigan? I mean, he was a good football player. A little undersized, but total competitor.
There's a reason he became a coach, and the next guy became a coach, Deshae Townsend.
Coach on the field. I mean, Deshae was so smart. And he was a guy, anybody that played with Deshae will tell you how smart he was. These are humble dudes, man. These are guys, a lot of those guys, he's a humble guy. But he always, again, was in the right place at the right time, and Mr. Reliable.
Big Snack, Casey Hampton.
What can I get? He's the best. I mean, Big Snack was a guy who just, everybody loved him. He was a man for everybody. It didn't matter who you were, he could connect with you and relate to you. Immovable. He was a mountain in the middle of the line of scrimmage. And it was funny because his technique wasn't perfect, but he was so big and strong. I mean, I just have visions of him taking on double teams, standing straight up with his arms out, like straight out to the side, just holding dudes up.
Like the guy in The Longest Yard?
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. And he was just, right. He's so strong, he'd be standing straight up. And I have a memory of Hamp. Listen, Hamp's one. I mean, Hamp and I are still very close. Hamp's just—it's an incredible man. I remember rookies coming in together. He was a first-round draft pick. I was an undrafted free agent. We came in the same, 01, and that was back in the day when the weight room was under a tent down on the field at St. Vincent's. You remember that?
Yes.
And we would be done. We would, and that was back in the day when we would do this pursuit drill with Coach Cower. And so after practice, we would run these pursuit drills for conditioning, and we'd be gassed. I mean, it would be tough. And we'd be soaking wet with sweat, and then we'd have to take our pads off and go lift for 45 minutes to an hour. And I remember after a grueling practice, I mean, we were blistered. And we go into this weight room, which is as hot as I'll get out, and Casey throws on four plates on the bench and just repping it out like it was candy.
Wow.
Yeah, and I was just like, dude, like I couldn't even barely move. And Casey's over there just cranking it out. I mean, he when he came into the league, before his body started to break down when we were older, dude was a specimen.
Would he tell you guys about his days as a fullback in high school?
Oh, I want to hear. I got a lot. Oh, my goodness.
He would tell us those.
Well, let me tell you this story. So Casey had been bugging Bruce Arians for a long time to put him at the goal line fullback.
Yes.
Right? And it just was all over BA for a while. And so so finally, remember we would do like a Saturday, I believe it was like a Saturday morning, or maybe it was a day we did goal line, but I think it was a Saturday morning, and Casey goes over, so it's first on first team, goal line, ball on the 2-yard line or 1-yard line, and Casey's in the offensive huddle, right? He lines up in the backfield at fullback, and we go at it, and here comes Casey, lead blocking. And he takes on Clint Kriewoldt. Remember Clint Kriewoldt, 5'7"?
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
Clint,
yeah.
No, Clint was, Clint played in the league for a long time. Clint was a good football player. And he met Clint in the hole. And they hit each other as hard as they could hit each other. And it hurt Hamp. And Hamp turned around and said, I ain't doing that again. I'm done. BA, I'm done with that. I'm not playing fullback no more. And Hamp never got in that offensive huddle ever again.
That is tremendous. What a story. Dr. Brett Kiesel.
Kiesel. I'll tell you what. Kiesel, technician, athletic, smart, a guy that just, man, Kiesel made plays. And when I think about Brett, too, I think about how he made his way onto this team. You know, he was a special teams guy. And he had to fight his way on that way, and then
him
he got
and
a
Hines.
Shot. Yeah, and he got a shot because Kiesel, Kiesel left, and they turned it over to Kiesel, and he ran with it. But I remember him running down at the R5 or L5 and blowing people up. I remember one time Brett going into, I think his second year, he tore his rotator cuff, and he got put on IR. And that whole offseason when we were working out, and I remember Coach Mitch would come into the weight room. And Brett's probably laughing if he's listening to this. And we'd be lifting, and Mitch would come in, and he'd be razzing. He'd be giving Kiesel a hard time because Kiesel really didn't play his rookie year. And, really hadn't proven himself, especially on special teams. And Mitch would ask him, how you doing? And I'm good. I'm okay. All right, Kiesel, we're going to see you ready, Kiesel. We're going to see you ready. And we'd be laughing. He'd go, no, Kiesel, we're going to see you're ready here shortly, man. We're going to get those pads on. We're going to see if you're ready. And it was so funny because Mitch was serious, man. He didn't know if Brett could play. And he was going to see if he was ready. And Brett went out there and he showed he was ready.
Man, did he ever. He had a great career. So many other guys. Those are the starters, Hokie. And man, it's just a team and a defense to look back upon with so much joy if you're a Steelers fan. The book is called Legendary. It's by George Von Banco, Scott Brown, who used to cover the team for the Trib for a long time, and of course, Dick LeBeau. Thank you for taking the time to do that. I think people love that kind of thing.
What a treat. It really is. It's the season, right?
Absolutely, man. All right. Let's get to a little review of the Colts game. And let's start with this because we were talking before you came on the air. It sounds like upon watching film, you have a different opinion of how the fumbled snap happened in the shotgun on the Steelers' final series. Fields took responsibility for it.
Which a leader does.
Well, yeah, I think you and Bob both felt like that was the case, but now you think maybe differently.
Yeah, it's interesting as the weeks unfolded and watched the film, and then Coach Tomlin told us a lot without telling us. He talked about the offensive line, right, and new guys being in there, and he was asked about that play, and he was talking about the O-line. He didn't put the blame on anybody. He just said, you know, there was some communication, there was an understanding, I believe, or whatever his wording was, but that's how I took it. And as you go back and you can't see it on the TV version, but if you watch the All 22, I think there was, you know, you had Zach Frazier, rookie, playing center, and you know, Justin Fields, and then you have Mason McCormick at left guard, right? And so when you go on the road, Starkey, what happens is, you know, it's so loud that you can't go off the voice of the quarterback. You can barely hear the voice, if hear it at all. And so you go to the silent count. And what happens a lot of times is you'll have a guard, the big ragu, Ramon Foster, used to do this, where he would look over his shoulder and he would look for Ben to lift his leg and say, hey, okay, we're going now, right? And then he would turn and he would tap Pouncey on the hip. Well, because what you don't want to do is you don't want to have your center looking between his legs as everybody's moving around, you know, and Frazier comes up and everybody's in a different spot than where they were before he went between his legs. So Frazier, you want him to keep his eyes up. He's calling out the protection. He's looking at the front and the movement. And McCormick's looking behind him, and he sees Fields lift his leg. A quick lift. Well, Frazier's in the middle of his calls. Fields is still scanning the field, right? And McCormick, at that first lift, taps Frazier, as you look at it on the All-22 film with the end zone view of the film. But then McCormick kind of looks forward and then looks to the side again, and he leaves his arm out there like he's getting ready to tap again. He looked unsure. I don't know if he knew or fully understood, or maybe they didn't rep it a lot. But this is a new rookie, hadn't had a lot of snaps on the road, first game on the road, playing in the NFL. And so I think that there's more to this. And what I like is guys aren't pointing the finger at anybody. They're taking the blame, and that tells you they're a team.
Yeah.
It tells you that they're together, and they're not gonna. Now there's been a lot of finger pointing going on, and you know, on that field, as you go watch the film, guys yelling at each other for making mistakes and blown coverages and stuff. But in this situation, nobody pointed a finger at anybody. But I think there's more than just Fields lifting his leg. Yeah, that's how a leader does. I need to be ready when I lift my leg. But I think that it was on the second lift. I'm not telling you that I have any inside information. I'm telling you, I think that the tap came too early.
Fan Twitter, brought to you by South Hills Kia, Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. Text line, brought to you by Edgar Snyder & Associates, personal injury law firm, where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. Chris Hoke, brought to you by McVeigh Heating and Plumbing. And the fan, fan time right now, it's 11:26. Time to stop blindly paying those increasing auto and home insurance premiums. Contact the Buell Insurance Agency at Gibsonia. See what they can do for you. All right, I have just random questions about the game and certain players. Some Mike Tomlin decision-making. I'm looking to get your takes on, Hokie. But first, when Devin Bush was here, I remember that you were very critical of him for not being able to shed blocks.
Sure.
And I realized that part of a defensive line's responsibility is to minimize that.
Yep.
But with Patrick Queen, there is a criticism out there through four games, and especially this game, that he may have some of those same issues of being able to stand up to a run game and take on blocks. Fair or unfair?
Fair. I think it's fair. I still think that you know, it's early and he's getting used to this defense, and you know, some guys start fast and pick up. I noticed that in the first two games. Last game, I thought he did a great job against the Chargers of making plays. He started with a big time hit on the first play of the game. But you see that at times where he engages a lineman and it's very difficult for him to get off that block. And that's what you saw that a few times in this game against the Colts.
DeMarvin Leal had an opportunity in this game. To the naked eye, it didn't look like he made much of an impact. Fair or unfair there?
Oh, listen, I think that's not his strength as being. I mean, he could do it. He's serviceable.
I mean, just his general performance.
Yeah, I don't think he made any mistakes, but I don't think he made big plays. But neither did the other outside linebackers.
Did they run at Herbig?
They ran. Going back and looking at the All-22 and looking at the film, with All-22, and I say it's the film that all the players watch. It shows the sideline view and then the end zone view, sideline view, end zone view of every single play. So you really can get a good view of what happened on a play. I don't think that Herbig played that bad on the run. I think he, you know, could he have maybe played a little tighter? Sure. And that happens to everybody, right? And that's not every play. I thought that Herbig represented himself well. There were other breakdowns too. But the reality is that DeMarvin Leal, he's not a very quick, get on the edge, beat you with speed kind of pass rusher. That's more of a Herbig. That's more of a Alex Highsmith, a TJ Watt. He's more of a big guy that's going to get in there and get the job done. Maybe a little more athletic than the other D linemen, but they expect him to go out there and beat someone with a speed rush. It's just not going to happen with DeMarvin Leal. But he did his job. But when he's out there, you have a better opportunity to stop the run than you do to get pressure on the quarterback.
Fair to say they missed Highsmith because
there's no question. Yeah. But listen, here's the thing. Herbig had 2 sacks the week before.
Right.
Herbig was an absolute monster in pass rush. They did a good job. Now, he got pressure a couple times, but Flacco, Richardson played a series and a half. Flacco did a good job of getting the ball out of his hands, right? They only had 2 sacks. The Colts striking did a great job of scheming the Steelers defense and limiting what they do. And so they had the ball out quick. They had quick slants. They ran pass routes that got guys open quickly so they would get the ball out of their hands. And so that's really the story here, right? And they did a great job of scheming TJ Watt. I just think overall the Colts had a great game plan.
I think if I were any opposing coach facing the Steelers, I would take a hard look at what Shane Steichen does against Mike Tomlin's defense in his past 3 games, one as Eagles coordinator, two as Colts coach calling the plays. His past three games against Tomlin, 92 points and 1,131 yards with Joe Flacco, Anthony Richardson, Gardner Minshew, and then Jalen Hurts was playing really well that year.
And it's those quick hitting plays, right? It's just getting the ball out fast. If you hold on to the ball against the Steelers, you're done, right? What you want to do is the way you limit the impact of TJ Watt and Alex Highsmith and Cam Hayward is get in, get out. And you saw Flacco right when he came in getting the ball out quick. Right? Anthony Richardson.
Yeah.
Anthony Richardson held on the ball a little bit more, right? But he hit that nice strike on the first play of the game, which was could have been tipped. It was just, I thought it was a great throw. People say it was lucky, but I thought it was a good throw. But when Flacco came in, he was quick striking and he was accurate for the most part. And that limited the ability of the Steelers pass rush to get to him.
So we'll get to some of the big stories here. Davante Adams and Justin Fields in the next segment. But real quick, just a quick take on a number of Tomlin decisions. I don't think he had his best game. Maybe you disagree. He kept a timeout in his, quote, hip pocket when the Steelers appeared to be discombobulated going into 4th and 11. He later explained sometimes as an offense, you use pace to keep the defense off balance. The defense wasn't off balance. It was 4th and 11. It wouldn't have been 4th and 11 if you had him on the run.
Yeah.
What'd you think of that?
I just thought that, you know, he was saving. And he said this in his press conference, Stark. He said he was saving it. There's always a moment where you want to keep that for the field goal, right? What if you catch the ball in bounds and you want to be able to stop the clock to kick a field goal?
I mean,
it's
still 37 seconds left.
Yeah, but 37 seconds, you know, if you don't have a timeout, it goes quick.
Yeah.
It goes quick. Right. And you get that ball and you get everybody lined up. So and I would say most coaches would make that same decision. Right? You want to hold that time. 4th and 11, they had a full clock to get the call in and get lined up. So to me, that doesn't bother me at all.
Tomlin throws a challenge flag on the first play of the second quarter when it appeared pretty obvious that Josh Downs made the catch there. No?
Yeah, that one surprised me. There had to have been a reason why he threw it, but to me it looked like it was a catch. And again, Coach Tomlin goes off gut, and on that one he wanted to challenge it. And there could be other reasons, but for me that I wouldn't have challenged it. And I had an eye view from the TV.
Yeah.
And I had the instant replay. And so it didn't look like it, but he didn't have that.
He didn't throw a challenge flag right before that when Najee looked to have converted a third and two when he dived over the first down line before the Fields sneak out of the shotgun.
Yeah.
He didn't challenge that one. What did you think of that? Did it occur to you during the game that's challengeable? Or don't you remember that one?
I remember that one. I'm trying to remember. I don't remember what I was thinking. I just thought he was short.
Do you have any idea why Tomlin...
Let me go back to that real quick.
Yeah.
It's very difficult to challenge a spot unless it's super obvious.
Yeah.
That's a tough deal, right?
I mean, that hasn't stopped
times,
him before.
How many times has he challenged... How many times has he challenged a spot and lost? What, a lot? And he gets crucified in this town because he does that. And then when he doesn't do it, he gets questioned.
Well, that's because right after that, he made a terrible challenge.
Yeah, well, what I'm saying is like it's very difficult to challenge a spot when it's so close.
All right.
And so that's why here I don't think if – because, you know, one way if he does challenge it and he loses, oh, why'd he do it? He always challenges a spot and he always loses.
I hear you.
And then he does it here and he doesn't do it here and he gets beat up.
On the next play, after Najee dives going for third and two, it's fourth and inches. And if you look at the camera angle, it was inches. It wasn't even close to a yard. Arthur Smith essentially turns fourth and inches into fourth and five by going in the shotgun.
Yeah.
Okay, you have a 6'3 quarterback.
Line him up behind center and sneak the ball. Now, you and I'm old school. I would have gone quarterback.
Zach Frazier.
But listen.
Najee pushing from behind.
I agree with you. I would have gone quarterback sneak there or something. You have a big guy. He's in similar size to Jalen Hurts, who those guys, they're the ones that run that thing to perfection. But he's also a running quarterback. They had hat on a hat. You miss a block. The reality is 62 missed his block.
Yeah.
Flat out. Make your block. Right? Coach LeBeau used to always say, hey, I can't get you free, but I can get you hat on a hat. And his thing principle goes true on offense. 62 had a hat on a hat on the linebacker, and he missed his block. This happened a couple times, right? People want to criticize a play call. It was a beautiful play call if the guys would do their job. And then here, 62, you just put a hat on him and don't let him come clean. Fields gets that.
I guess the fundamental flaw that jumps out in the explanation there.
So many teams do that, though.
What?
So many teams do that. They go fullback. A lot of teams go fullback, especially when you have a running quarterback like that.
Yeah.
They think that he can get – I mean, he's not like just some slappy – I mean, Justin Fields runs, he's a runner.
For sure, but the flaw I see in your explanation is that you're depending on 62 to make a block. I'd rather just have my quarterback lean forward.
Well, if you put a guy on the field, you better expect him to make a block. If you're putting a guy on the field and say, I don't know if he's going to make a block, go get somebody else. I mean,
well,
you put him on the field, you're expecting him to do the play, whether you're running out there with one leg or not. If you're going on the field, make the play, make a block.
Well,
if you're there, you can't get there, but he was right there in front of him.
Yeah. I prefer leaning forward with my 6'3 quarterback.
I told you. I'm old
with
school.
Frazier. Frazier moves people.
What I'm telling you is I would have called a quarterback sneak.
Yeah.
But that's trending that way in the NFL. That's not just the Steelers that do that.
Right.
A lot of teams in the NFL do that. And the thing is, you get a hat on a hat, make the play.
Lastly and quickly, do you have any idea why Tomlin wasted a timeout with 6:06, one they really could have used, with 6:06 left in regulation? After they stopped the Colts on a third down play, creating a fourth and five, and their kicker kicks a 35-yard field goal. So before the kick, it's an incredibly benign situation. Why did he use a timeout?
I'm trying to remember that situation.
Exactly. Everybody was. And then I went back and where did that first timeout go? And there it went.
Yeah.
To nowhere land.
I can't think of that moment because, it didn't stand out to me. I'll tell you, I mean, let's talk about where the game could have gone differently.
Can we talk that? Use that as a tease?
Yeah. Yeah. I think we can talk about a couple moments in the game where if the Steelers would have done something different or made stops, this game would have been completely different.
Let's talk about that. The matchup coming up and Devontae Adams. Chris Hoke, two-time Super Bowl champion, right here All right, Hokie, we have a lot to get to and time's a-wasting. So quick take time from a two-time Super Bowl champion. Hey, first of all, I got a note from Dr. Adam Crowley that Trey Essex said the exact same thing to them that you said about the snap to Fields.
There we go.
That it was probably a mix-up.
See, and mine's film study.
Yeah.
Trey's an offensive lineman. He knows the insides and outs.
Love it.
But that's great.
Absolutely love it. All right, you said the real turning point in the game was what last week?
To me, the real turning point in the game, well, there's 2 points that went to the Steelers' favor. I thought that Justin Fields stood up, and after that fumble, he was on fire.
Yeah.
3 consecutive touchdown throws. But here's where I think that the difference happened. People are making a big deal about Minka's penalty. That was a garbage penalty.
Right? Garbage.
Second 10, and they gave him 15 yards.
Garbage.
That was an incomplete. It would have been 3rd and 10. But here's what happened. A Steelers defense who typically responds,
yes.
A Steelers defense who makes big plays in big moments, 3rd and 7 converted, 3rd and 10 converted. A defense that was on their game would have stopped Flacco on that 3rd and 7. Would have, when Downs got that, 20-plus yard catch, not a touchdown.
Yeah.
He broke a tackle, and then a 3rd and 10 touchdown to Ogletree from the 15-yard line.
Nobody else on the TV screen.
You got to stop.
What happened?
You got to get a stop.
Where was everybody?
Bad calls happen, but good teams overcome bad calls, and they had an opportunity to at least hold them to a field goal.
Yeah. And where was everybody on that play, Hokie?
There were a couple blown assignments in this game and mistakes that were made that they're going to have to clean up because you can't do that, especially on the road to a team like the Colts.
Davante Adams, a yes or no from you?
No.
Why not?
Why not? I just think the Steelers, you know, I think you give up too much for something like that. And he wants to go to the Jets. He wants to be with Aaron Rodgers.
Well, he's right? open to the Steelers.
He is. He's open to the Steelers. But
I mean, they have a problem, don't they?
I think you go out and you're giving up draft picks. I mean, the Steelers got a good core right now. And listen, Justin Fields threw for 312 yards last week. Right? And protect him and let him be Justin Fields and try to eliminate some of these silly mistakes that he's made. Fumbling the ball, and forcing the ball. You know, that's what's going to happen. But that fumble is a big one. I think you'll see this team continue to grow. He's gotten better each and every week.
Is he your guy, even if Russell's healthy?
Listen, I think that he's the kind of guy that Coach Tomlin wants.
Would he be your guy?
Would he be my guy?
Yeah.
He threw for 312 yards last week. He ran for 55 yards. He'd be anybody's guy if he plays like that every week.
Hmm. What if he has a mediocre game and Russell's healthy next week? Here's the way to phrase that question. Has Fields played well enough to earn a bad game and still be the guy?
Absolutely. Absolutely. He's played well enough to go 4-0.
That was a very well-worded question, if I don't
that was really,
mind
well, you're
saying,
always
so.
Really well-worded.
Thank you.
But I think that, listen, here's the reality is that you have Justin Fields, you see what he got, and I could see Tomlin potentially putting in Russell Fields just to see, okay, would it be any different? He can always go back to Justin. I think Justin's his long-term plan, though. I really do.
Here's one of the questions of the game, Hokie. One of the questions of the game, because it was so eye-opening, because they were doing the same thing. Cordarrelle Patterson is unstoppable in the same scenarios on seemingly the same running plays.
Yeah.
As Najee is gaining 1 yard.
Yeah,
what happened? How could that happen?
It's different styles. And we talked about this last year with Jalen Warren and Najee. Najee is not a guy that's a quick stop and restart, right? Cordarrelle Patterson, boom, boom. He can stop on a dime and accelerate. Jalen Warren, stop on a dime and accelerate. That's not Najee's game. Najee, one, I think that he struggles because the cutback, he has a hard time stopping and then cutting back and going and getting up to the second level. Number two, it's vision. Sometimes I worry about the vision of Najee Harris, right? He gets up in there, and there was a couple plays in the game that were the exact same runs that Cordarrelle Patterson had.
Right.
Patterson jump cut and accelerated back into the backside A or B gap, And Najee forces it in the front side B gap, right? And so sometimes I wonder about his vision. And listen, I'm not coming out and saying it, but I think there's been some criticism about his vision over the years that he's been here, right? So I think it's a combination of that, and he's just more of a power runner than a jump cut accelerating kind of runner.
There's been talk. In fact, Jerry Dulac put this out the other day. that the main reason the Steelers didn't give Najee the fifth-year option is because they were as curious as anybody to see, does Najee's running style fit in Arthur Smith's offense? So if you could simplify this, tell us how Arthur Smith's run game, the scheme of his run game, is different than what the Steelers have had, if it's different, and how that would affect Najee.
It's just a power running game. It's just line up, and I'm going to whoop the man in front of me. And here's the reality. If you look at it, when I talk about Patterson jump cutting and getting backside on a hitting a backside gap, you're not going to win every block. But as a running back, your job is, if it's not open, to try to find a way to find another hole that's open, right, and get up to the second level and third level. And Najee, those guys that weren't winning every block, they're not dominating the line of scrimmage right now. You got a lot of young guys in there, and so they're getting beat at times. And so Najee, if he's not jump cutting, if he's not seeing the backside hole, or he's not bouncing it, and he's able to beat someone. That's another thing, too. I don't think for him not being able to accelerate. Now listen, yeah. I'm not saying he's a bad running back. I don't want anybody to listen to this. He's a different type of running back. He's a power back. I'm going to lower my shoulder, and I'm going to blow through you. And it's tough to do that when you're at the line of scrimmage, right? But, there's a play where he was hitting up in the B gap, and the outside edge, the outside linebacker, got too tight up on the tackle on Dan Moore. And sucked in, all he had to do was jump cut to the outside. He would have beat him around the corner and gone for maybe 7 or 8 yards. He didn't see that, A. But, B, I don't think he has the acceleration to get around the corner like that, like a Patterson or Jaylen Warren does. So it's just different running styles where if a play breaks down, then Patterson or Warren, boom, they can adjust and fly. Najee, if that hole's not there, look at Derrick Henry. Derrick Henry, I don't think he's a jump cut guy, but if the hole's not there, he's getting 2-3 yards. And the whole philosophy is, I'm going to pound you. I'm going to put you in a submission, and then what they did against the Chargers in the fourth quarter. And then we're going to break for a 20-yard run. Then we're going to break for a 12-yard run. That's Arthur Smith's style, and that's kind of how it was when I was there with the Steelers. We were just going to keep pounding. And the reality is, we're seeing Patterson. We're seeing Warren, who, boop, 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 like butterflies, or not butterflies, bumblebees, and then they're gone. That's not Najee style.
Thing that worries you most about the Cowboys?
Dak Prescott going off and us trying so hard to shut down CeeDee Lamb that we forget about some of the other guys that are like the Calvin Austins, that are like the Van Jeffersons, that can hurt you, right? They're not game breakers, but if you focus too much on CeeDee Lamb, CeeDee Lamb is their offense. They don't have a running game, right? I think I read they have, 4 or 5 runs over 10 yards? I think 4 runs over 10 yards this year, and 3 of those are CeeDee Lamb.
Wow.
Lining up in the backfield, right? So they're trying to put him all over the place, trying to get the ball in his hands. But now, they have the tight end. He's not going to beat – he's not a game breaker. He'll move the chains. He's not going to crush you, Ferguson. But CeeDee Lamb, let's not focus so much on him that we're allowing the other guys to get open – and he's able to methodically move the ball down the field and hurt us. Because Dak Prescott, you leave someone open, he'll get it to him.
Who's going to win the game, and what will the score be?
I think Steelers coming home are going to rebound. I think that this Cowboys team, listen, we talk about the injuries on the Steelers. They've lost their two of their best front 7 guys.
Yeah.
Micah Parsons out. That's tough. And then Deron Bland, their all-pro safety is out.
Oh, man.
Yeah, our corner. I think he had 5 pick sixes last year, Deron Bland. So he's a corner, actually, the opposite of Diggs. So I think that they're really beat up defensively. So the Steelers, if they just go into this game and take what the Cowboys give them and not try to force things, not try to go for the big play, just go down the field and methodically just do what they've been doing. They did in the second half, against the Colts. I think they win this game, I would say, maybe easily by 10 points.
Did T.J. Watt have
a bad... Is 10 points easily? 10 points to me.
Yeah,
means,
I think a double-digit win. It depends on how the game goes.
Yeah.
Right? You could be up three.
If you're -2 in the turnover ratio, no. But if they go back to how they did the first couple games where they were +5,
yeah,
right? Just don't turn the ball over and create a turnover or two with Dak Prescott. I think they can win this game by 10.
Did T.J. Watt have a bad game?
I think they did a great job. I don't think a bad game is...
More about them than him.
The way they were blocking him. Listen, they have him lining up almost on the sideline, right? They stretched him out, and then what they're doing is they're They have the tight end. The tight end's jumping him. So the tight end's slowing his momentum down. So, right, so think about, like, we're talking about Najee Harris. Stopping and accelerating. So as a pass rusher, it's all about your get off, right? It's about threatening that offensive tackle and then beating him around the edge like he does so many times, or the tackle thinks you're going to beat him with your speed and quickness off the ball. He commits outside, and then TJ, well, how many times have we seen him with a quick swim inside for the sack, right? The reality is on this thing is they were slowing down his momentum, so his strength about his quickness and get off on the ball, that where he's beating guys, he has to re-accelerate. By that time, the tackle is stepping back. It's hard to explain. He's taking his three-step drop or whatever, and he's waiting for him. By that time, it's very difficult for TJ Watt to get to the quarterback. And then when he's one-on-one, they're holding him.
Yeah, there's always that. 50-minute mark on the Fan, brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Jeep Dodge, Route 19, Peters Township, celebrating 50 years in the South Hills. Fan Hotline presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. And Verizon, the official 5G network of the Pittsburgh Steelers, is treating deserving veterans to lunch with Cam Hayward. Head to a Verizon store by October 20th to nominate a vet. No purchase necessary. 18 plus to enter. Visit Lunch with Cam Hayward from Verizon.com. That's Lunch with Cam Hayward from Verizon.com for details. Hokie, you're a wonderful man.
What a great hour. That was so fast.
That was great. We should do something on the 2008 defense.
I would love to do an hour and just talk about the players. It'd be great.
Yeah. All right, man. We'll talk to you next week.
Take care.
That is two-time Super Bowl champion Chris Hoke.